It's Tuesday, March 1st, and welcome to our live broadcast called This and That. And I'm your host, Pastor David Ripley. This is where I get to offer my opinions on the news headlines of the day. This and That airs Tuesdays at 7 p.m. and is rebroadcast Thursdays at 7 p.m. Before we get into today's stories, let me state once again that the opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Grace Christian Fellowship or Grace Christian Radio. The weather for tomorrow, and I'm so happy to have our producer with us tonight, Adam Sumbler.
I'm here.
Yes, he's here with us tonight, folks. And the weather has been going up and down. It was so cold not too long ago. Then it snowed.
Lots of heavy, wet snow.
Heavy, wet snow. And then today, it's like spring. But anyway, for tomorrow, March the 2nd, it will be cloudy with periods of light rain and a high of 8.
Beautiful. Let's melt all this slushy stuff away.
Yes, absolutely. All around my property, let it all melt. We want a huge melt, well, to a certain degree, without flooding.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. Well, let's just continue on talking about the weather. Because in British Columbia, the Weather Network is forecasting, wait for it, a few more storm systems and temperatures averaging below normal. I hate to say this, Adam. You know, I'm just really reciting what I've read. Prolonging the cold and snowy winter the province has seen.
I guess the groundhog must have ran back away into his hole.
I don't know what happened to
I don't know what happened either.
I don't know what happened to the groundhog, but he's getting things wrong, dead wrong. More precipitation than normal is expected in southern and central BC. With snowpack already in place, and additional alpine snow and cooler temperatures expected. The meteorologist is saying this is a great year for spring skiing in BC.
That's awesome. What I'm most excited about is usually when we get cold springs like this and lots of moisture, we see less forest fires. A lot more snow up in the mountains, a lot more moisture early on, doesn't get as hot as quick. I'd take this over forest fires.
You know, that's true. More snowpack, more snow, less forest fires.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Well, we're happy to have Paul with us tonight, a volunteer from the Freedom Rallies. These rallies are taking place downtown, and he will be sharing with us in a few minutes some of the things that are happening and tell us a little bit about the rallies. Well, we're going to begin tonight in Ontario. The end of mask mandates in Ontario, the premier says, is not far away.
Good. I was in Alberta. It was so nice. No passports, could go in anywhere, do anything you wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me a bit about that.
It was good. There were still mask mandates until March 1st, right?
Right, right.
But it was great to be able to just go in, have dinner places, eat places. And you know what? Like, when I was out buying my suit and stuff like that, I was like, didn't have my mask on for parts of it. And, you know, everybody's like, yeah, it's ending in a day. Who cares, right? Like, everybody in Alberta is ready to go back to normal. It might not be
a bad place for a little getaway.
Getaway to Alberta.
Yeah, getaway to Alberta. You don't have to wear your mask. You don't have to have a passport, so on and so forth. But anyway, the end of mask mandates in Ontario, the premier is saying, is not far away and could come as early as after March break, Premier Ford said Monday. Ontario's COVID-19 vaccine certificate or passport system ended today.
Woo!
Where's the clapping?
Oh.
Someone.
Some technical difficulties.
We need to have some. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. That's what we're looking for. Thank you very much.
Someone played a trick on somebody.
I think so. And remaining capacity limits for indoor public settings will be lifted as well. And so, you know, there's some excitement building in Ontario.
Exactly. But where's BC at?
I don't know. I'm going to come to BC in a minute.
Good.
I'm ready. The Maritime provinces have removed proof of vaccination requirements at non-essential services like gyms, restaurants, and entertainment centers, and some are welcoming the change. That happened yesterday in the Maritime provinces.
Wow, yeah, we're seeing the change.
I mean, it's happening. And then, as you've already stated, Alberta's premier marked the second reopening of the province during the COVID pandemic today. Yep. It was a less extravagant affair than summer of 2021. The first time Premier Jason Kenney announced Alberta would be rescinding most of its public health measures. Speaking in Edmonton's lush river valley with the capital city skyline behind him. And do you remember that big billboard that he had back in the summer of 2021, open for summer? Well, he didn't do the grand extravaganza that he did then, but he's still saying that Alberta is open for business and most of the restrictions have been lifted, except on public transit, you still have to wear a mask. And if you go into a hospital or a nursing home, or something along that line, you still have to wear a mask. So I don't know. I'm thinking I might take a little vacation to Alberta.
Holiday trips to Alberta this year.
Oh, boy.
Exciting.
Well, let's talk about BC. At the start of a new month, health officials said they're looking ahead to what changes can be made to existing COVID restrictions in British Columbia. And they really have not come up with anything. Really, they're just kind of stalling.
So they're stalling. Every other province is dropping everything and has at least a plan. They have a plan, like, by this date. And BC's just like, meh. That's it.
Speaking at a news conference today, the province's top doctor said her team is looking at additional precautions.
Additional precautions?
That could be made in the fall. She's already looking to the fall. Forget about spring, folks. Forget about summer. She's already thinking about precautions for the fall.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
I'm about to fall over, Adam. I'm about to faint in my chair.
Oh, the rest of Canada is getting rid of stuff. Bonnie Henry? We need to tighten down, get ready for the fall.
Oh, boy. Dr. Bonnie Henry added, it's possible that some measures will be removed ahead of spring break as transmission is currently down. That's a kind of a small glimmer of hope for us here in BC.
I think a lot of people might move back to Alberta.
I don't know. It's really hard to say exactly what's going to happen, but she seems to have nothing planned as far as, you know, all the other provinces. Let's talk about them. Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes.
That's all of them.
Yeah, that's all of them except for BC. We're kind of straggling behind, and we're really not doing anything. It's just amazing. You know, that we live in this beautiful province, and yet we continue to have all of these mandates.
You know the most interesting thing? I was talking to some Albertans while we were shopping in Calgary there, and one of the nice ladies was like, you mean you still have all the restrictions in BC, like hippie BC? And I was like, yep. she was like, that's the last place I thought would have restrictions. I was like, yep.
You know, I was reading somewhere, I can't remember which publication, but they were saying even the Hamilton Police Force is inviting some of its unvaccinated officers back to be part of the force.
Good.
Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful.
And I think I was reading somewhere else. I can't remember which province, but they were actually inviting some of the healthcare workers back.
Oh.
I can't remember which province it is. I have to do some more research to to find out where that was. But, you know, they were inviting some of their healthcare workers, unvaccinated healthcare workers back. I mean, think about it. Some of these people that were fired were experienced healthcare workers.
Now, oh,
I know Minister Dix is saying, oh, we're going to open it up and we're going to provide more opportunity for nurses to get trained and get licensed. But, you know, how long does it take for a nurse, for a nurse to become experienced and being able to deal with issues? Yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't happen overnight.
Well, it's just not the schooling. It's also like the workplace environment of learning what's going on, right? Like, school is one thing, but practical work and knowledge that comes from practical work is so much. Especially, it takes dealing with a lot of things in the medical world to get better at dealing with them, right?
Like, exactly. Well, you know, here's something interesting, and this might blow you away.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
Ready to go.
Israel is opening its doors to all foreigners, including unvaccinated visitors next month.
Wow.
That's just off the press, folks.
The country that has, like, been the hardest on vaccines.
Yes.
They were on, what, booster number 4, 5? I lost count.
And you know what? I just find this amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I just have to read it again. Israel is opening its doors to all foreigners, including visitors, beginning on March 1st. I said next month. Well, it's already next month.
Yeah, it's already.
Beginning on March 1st, that's today, tourists of all ages will be allowed to visit Israel so long as they submit to a COVID test before they board their plane to Israel. And another as soon as they arrive at the airport in Israel. I mean, it's just two small tests, and they're able to, you know, go about their business.
Yeah. I mean, that's better than how they were.
How do you feel about that, Paul?
I think it's strange that you're tested before you get on a flight and then when you get off the flight. That's pretty weird.
It is kind of funny,
isn't it? What are they going to do? What are they going to do? You land to get COVID, they're like, go on back. Here's my positive when I left, though.
But how can you get it if everyone tested negative?
Yeah.
And then you get tested again?
Yeah.
And then you're positive.
Yeah.
That's a good point, you know.
Depending on the test, right?
Yeah, that's a good point you brought up. It is a little strange to get tested when you get on the plane and then get tested when you get off the plane because, you know, what could have happened when you were on the plane?
Yeah, it's too late anyway, so yeah.
But I think it is an encouraging bit of news that things are changing to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Well, whether it will happen in Canada or not under Prime Minister Trudeau, I really wonder when he is going to budge from his position.
Well, it's interesting because federally nothing has changed.
Right.
Right? But provincial, we saw the provincial governments react to the trucker convoy, right? We saw them take action and be like, okay, Canadians are speaking out. But federally, nothing's changed federally. There's still the federal mandates for employees still exist.
Yeah. And you and I, if I'm not vaccinated, you're not vaccinated, we still can't get on a plane or a train.
Nope.
Right in our own country.
Yeah, we can't go interprovincial on planes or trains. Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you think about that decision and how it was made, it really boggles my mind. Do you have anything to share about that?
Oh, I won't even take a test.
Right.
There's no reason to do that. And then I know some of the labs have taken, they were made from China. And like when they process it, some of that DNA goes back to the sequencing, goes back to labs that are working with China. So it's a bit strange, if you ask me.
It is. And a lot of, you know, these negative tests and positive tests and one minute you have it and the next minute you don't have it. And those things need to be questioned. I agree with you.
Yeah. And the other thing about the opening places up, I don't think we should be, I mean, it's nice to have it, but we're just going back to normal.
True.
Could be a bit excited, but they've also reserved the right to bring it back again. All it takes is we have another strain.
Exactly.
And so one spring, so they're going to give you a, it could be a two steps forward, one step back for now. Then comes fall, two more steps forward, and then wait till next spring for another step back.
Well, Bonnie Henry's already preparing us for that, isn't she?
Shari's got the step back in line.
And actually, since we're talking about her, should we be taking 5 minutes to sanitize our hands and put on a mask before we talk about her?
Maybe we should.
Because that takes a while, you know.
Paul, we want to welcome you to the broadcast tonight. We're so happy to have you as a volunteer for the Freedom Rallies, and you've already shared a few thoughts, and I think they've been excellent. I just wanted to ask, as we invite you to share tonight, how long have you been volunteering at the Freedom Rallies?
I think it's been about 8 months now.
It's been 8 months?
Yeah.
And you know, I've been at a few of them. I remember I had my dog Rex, if he's listening tonight, my dog Rex. I came down to one of the Freedom Rallies a few weeks ago, and it was amazing the amount of people that were there. And what I noticed, there was a lot of younger people, a lot of younger people, people waving flags and of course, standing with the truckers in Ottawa. And it was very encouraging to see the cross-section of people, and especially, like I said, younger people being involved in these rallies, and just the excitement and the energy that was there. You know, and I've seen people driving by with flags and, you know, truckers driving by honking their horn. and so I think that, you know, to me it was very, very encouraging to see that. Tell us, you know, why these rallies started.
I think to raise awareness in the community that not everyone's on board with the lockdowns and the mandates. And I think they, just to get the message out that the government's overplayed their hand. And so what's really interesting is that also on what you were just talking about, it was nice to see families out there too with their children. That was beautiful. Really nice to see that. But I went blank.
That's okay.
As I get older, that happens once in a while.
I think it is encouraging, you know, when you see families attend something. You know, that gives you a kind of a sense of unity, you know, that everyone is participating.
Yeah.
They're coming together, and they're willing to stand up for the truth. You know, the idea is that, you know, the media gives us the impression that everyone is for the mandates.
Yeah.
Everyone is lockstep with everything the government has proposed, put in motion, made so-called laws, that everyone is for it. I think the trucker protests showed us that not everyone is in lockstep with everything that's been coming forth from the government, whether it's provincial or federal.
Yeah, quite a large percentage of the population basically showed up. They weren't in the convoy. They were in the overpasses and the stops, the pullover places. People were cheering them on all the way across. So, yeah, that was wonderful to see. And I think they raised the awareness up a notch and got people who were a little more complacent about it, didn't want to, you know, get out and say anything. I think it made a lot of people step up because we saw our numbers grow out there for our local protests after the truckers started their convoy.
And
I thought that was really encouraging. But that little bit helps. And that's kind of why we're out there, too. We want to be able to do the same kind of thing. Just being out there helps raise awareness, but it also helps encourage people who are kind of borderline on the fence. They don't want to make an issue of things. Nobody, you know, most people don't want to be activists. They just want to live their life, which is what we were doing before all this happened. And I get that, you know. So that's why I like on Saturdays now. We have families coming out. We have people rotating. Last Saturday we had a pretty small number when we first started. And then it grew. Got, you know, we're shot out there for 2 hours from 12 to 2 every Saturday. Mm-hmm. So it grew. And then it started to fade a little bit. And then other people started coming in. So it's nice to see the rotation that you don't have to be out there for 2 full hours. You can come out for 15 minutes, for half an hour, for an hour. Whatever you want to do, if you want to just come out and participate. And so people were doing that, and I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
It is good to see.
Yeah.
And, You know, the other question I had for you tonight was, have the rallies taken on a new urgency? Do you feel that because of the things that have happened in Ottawa, there were oppressive acts on behalf of the government that have taken place in Ottawa, do you think that these rallies have taken on a new urgency?
Absolutely. A lot of people who came out for the first time basically said that they've had enough. They went too far. The government's gone too far with this. Those truckers were peaceful. And the name-calling and the aggressive physical action that the police took really upset a lot of people. And they said, this is just too much. And it showed their hand. They overplayed their hand again. And they keep doing that. And so our numbers are growing. We're winning now. We've reached a tipping point. We've reached critical mass at this point, I think. And we're on the winning side. I think the vast majority of Canadians are now understanding that we need to let this go. That's why the provinces are starting to break that up.
And that's a good. Off. That's good to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's good to see. You know, especially the Premier Ford of Ontario. He said it doesn't matter if you get 5 vaccines or 10 vaccines, you're still going to get the virus. And you know that really shook a lot of people because they were thinking, "Hey, listen, I thought I got the vaccine to protect me from the virus.
And to give you more freedom.
Exactly. But it's not happening that way."
Well, just like they did with many other things, they said if you get the vaccine, you'll be freer, you'll have more privileges, some of your freedoms back, and you won't get the virus. Well, then we find out there were breakthrough cases, people were getting the virus, and they said, well, you can't spread the virus if you get the vaccine. Well, then they realized that people were spreading the virus. So they got it, they spread it, even though they were vaccinated, which is not a vaccine, but even though they received the jab, let's put it in more professional lingo.
Yep, the jab.
Exactly. So they said if you do that, you have more freedom, but they didn't give people those freedoms because they realized that they were wrong. They didn't tell us the truth. And if they said those things, they should have done the research beforehand to realize it, but they didn't. They jumped the gun again and overplayed their hand.
Yeah, I agree with you. Which of the mandates do you feel is the most oppressive? Is there any one of them that bothers you, keeps you up at night more than the others?
Well, I think the masks create division in the community. That's huge. That's on a personal level between people. People have lost friends and been distanced from family members. And I think that's a big thing. But I think the passport is really very oppressive and creates a level of control that we never thought we would see, not just in Canada, but in the Western world. The Western world was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And this violates those God-given rights that we have, given to us by God, not by government.
That's right.
Both the U.S. Constitution and the Canadian both emphasize the idea that this comes from God. It's not from government. And the government recognizes our inherent rights. And so to me, all of these things have stifled those rights a bit. But the passports is control. That's long-term control.
Yes. And it doesn't seem to me, listening to Bonnie Henry, it doesn't seem to me that she's going to back away from these passports anytime soon. In fact, her last statement, I do recall, she said it wouldn't be till June that these passports would be lifted. And I agree with you. It brings division in the community. It's a means of control. If you're not vaccinated, then you can't go to a hockey game. You can't go to certain restaurants. You're just, and in Quebec at one point, you couldn't even go to church if you didn't have a passport.
Yeah, and just like they're doing with the truckers, they could also use that to fine you, to get a hold of your bank account. They could tie all the government in Canada. They have your insurance information, your health records, your driving record, your driver's license, this passport, whether you were jabbed or not. That can affect whether you have access to government facilities and programs. So they have all this data already, and there's no way of taking that back. They're not going to destroy it.
No, they always say they're going to, but we know they're not.
Right.
They're going to build on it.
Exactly.
They're going to build on it. How do you feel about the QR code? You know, that's kind of connected to a lot of these passports. It's feeding information to the government, right?
Yeah. And then what was also really spooky about this is that the Canadian Bankers Association came out and basically tried to promote the idea of having one piece of ID basically on the QR code system, or something similar to it, that would control everything that you have, your credit, your bank account, your driver's license. It would be your ID for everything, and that would be, it could also become a social credit system as well to score you.
Yeah, and isn't that exactly what is happening in China?
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like we're taking the playbook from China and we're activating it in our own countries. These are some of the things that originated in China, and now we're seeing them begin to be activated right here in our own country, in the Western world, in Europe. And so, you know, it does concern me, this whole aspect of having everything digitalized, if I said that word right.
That's correct.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, that it becomes an opportunity for the government to gain all this information about each and every one of us, where we go, what we do.
I think we've already proved that, though, that the government has that information, right? Mm-hmm. So what I say by that is that we all carry smartphones. We all do things digitally already. And we already know that the government was tracking where people went with their smartphones, whether you liked it or not, right? They didn't ask. They just did it. Mm-hmm. We saw them seize people's bank accounts and freeze people's bank accounts in the protest. Like, the concept that, I guess what I'm saying is the concept that this isn't already here is already far past.
Right.
The government already has that control. They're just finally showing their hand.
Right. If you're crossing the border, you have to have that app on your phone that they...
the COVID app, yep.
Yeah. Now, they can track you. Any app pretty much is on your phone. And being government, you know they have the ability. They can track every movement you make. And it's just kind of spooky, again, that the government can do that. But Mussolini said, he defined fascism. It's the combination of government and industry, and in this case, big tech as well, to centralize power over the people. Well, that's fascism, and that's exactly what's happening. When the Canadian Bankers Association come out with a commercial promoting this one piece of ID that covers everything about you, working with the government, that's fascism. I hate saying that, but that's what Mussolini, how he defined it. And that's what we have. But that's private industry and big tech. Like you said, you have, that includes Facebook, Google, your searches, Apple, Android, all of this stuff. Working in hand, in lockstep with the government. And we see it. We know they're doing it. Because anyone who has something different than the government narrative, they're outed, they're othered, and they're canceled.
And, you know, the interesting thing is, Paul, before we get to Adam here, is, you know, a lot of the things that they're discovering now and saying, oh, you know, well, we're learning this. These things have been stated by others right from the beginning, and yet they were ostracized.
Right.
Because they weren't part of what was being said by the government, what was being said by media. They were ostracized. Mm-hmm. And yet now we're seeing these things play out as fact, as truth.
Yeah, I was just going to say about that concept, about big techs. Like, we saw early in COVID where organizations like Facebook and Google and the media were shutting down any other opinion other than what health ministers
early on
were saying, right? And now it's taken some time where doctors and some others have started coming out, and we're getting a lot of mixed results now because, well, there's actually some science behind things now.
Right.
So I guess what I said earlier was, like, I think we've lived in this world where the government's known so much about us for so long already. They're just finally revealing their hand, what they can do with that power.
Yeah.
And we know big tech, makes a lot of money off of all this information, and they sell it to whoever the highest bidder is, whether it's an advertising company like Nike or if it's the government, right? It's it's just, I think it finally, we're seeing the downside to technology. We're seeing the evil that can be done with it. And that's the scary part, I think, for a lot of people, because, you know, we're so ingrained with it in our everyday lives. Like, you can't do anything anymore for a government agency without going online, right? It's like, you want a hunting license? Gotta do it online.
Yeah.
You want a fishing license? Do it online, right? Like, they're removing all these different ways.
You want to open a business?
Online. Yeah, that's just my opinion, is that I think this has been around for a long time, but this pandemic has...
They built the foundation.
Built the foundation. Now this pandemic has allowed the government to show their hand more obvious than they have before in the past. So,
yeah. And, you know, this goes higher than just the governments of countries. This is part of the World Economic Forum. I mean, Trudeau was there. Klaus Schwab basically praised him. And the Great Reset is their term, not ours. People say it's a right-wing conspiracy theory. But that's the term that's used by Klaus Schwab. And so there's something going on with that that brings all this together. So, and when you start bowing to this, like the EU countries, for instance, that become members, they give up their sovereignty to the EU, and they're unelected. So what you have is this higher class of citizens ruling the world. That's the idea that they're going for. So that means your national sovereignty has been taken from you. You have to abide by their rules, and you don't elect them. That's why we need nations. That's why we need to have national sovereignty, and that can't be overridden by the United Nations or the Economic Forum or, you know, the Party of Davos.
Well, it's important that we learn from each other, right? As individuals, right? We're all different. We all have different opinions. We all have different ways of succeeding to similar goals or different goals. And one of the most important things about a democratic country is being able to talk about things and discuss things and see different point of views, because not one direction is always the correct point of view, right? It's not always the proper outcome. So, yeah, I think it does get scary when you have things like the United Nations start, like the EU start forming, and, you know, removing that chance for conversations and differences between individuals and countries.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, this is part of what happened with Ukraine and Russia. The EU and NATO wanted to make Ukraine a member, and that was right on Russia's border. And Putin is against that. Now, I know he's KGB and he's a bad hombre, but that's like having China have annex Mexico on the border of the U.S.
Yep.
That kind of thing. So I understand it. So this isn't just some. This could lead to a larger war. They start taking away, shutting down the banking ability of Russia. That affects the people. The oligarchs are still getting rich on oil, because
absolutely,
most of these countries are like this. The U.S. is paying $70 million a day for oil. I think it's $22 billion a month for oil. And Germany, France, the other countries in Europe are getting, many of them are getting oil from Russia, and they're planning on expanding that. So they're paying this. They're paying them, and then they want to put the EU on the border, and then NATO on the border with Russia. That's a threat.
And you know, the thing that I'm very concerned about is, you know, when you put all these sanctions, and I can understand to a certain degree why they're doing it, but you know, when you squeeze somebody into a corner, and squeeze them into a corner, you know, you're not sure what's going to happen.
There's no discussion, right? They're just doing it.
Yeah, it's scary where you think about where you look at, like, you look at Russia, which is a country that holds nuclear warfare, you know, and you're right, you know, you put a dog in a corner and you keep pressuring it, it might bite back, and it's, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but is it right for them to roll into Ukraine and start destroying the country's sovereignty and stuff? Like, I don't know. It's a tough go right now, and I'm happy that the Ukrainian people are fighting back, and, you know, there's people who are helping out the best they can. But I understand global politics is hard. It's complicated. Yeah. It's messy. It's dirty. It's hard.
And, you know, we don't see everything.
No, we don't. We see a fraction.
We hear a narrative from multiple sides.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't see the full picture. Only God can really see the full picture and understand all the dynamics of everything that's happening right now. And then, you know, let me just say, too, that Ukraine, as a country, there was quite a bit of corruption in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they impeached Trump, and that's why Biden was over there with his son and getting paid by the oligarchs millions and millions, if not billions of dollars, to the Biden family.
Mm. But I guess what we're concerned about is the civilians.
The civilians.
The innocent people.
That's the downside, is that in this whole thing, whether it's over Russia wanting to own more of the oil transports that go through eastern Ukraine or the production that's in eastern Ukraine, the downside is there's innocent humans that have families that are loving, caring, no different than us, that are suffering because there's people with big sticks wanting either more money or more power, or, you know, it's just, there's no love and care in there. And it's just, yeah, I feel for those people that are losing everything.
And some of these people that are in charge of this stuff that's going on don't care. They don't care if people die. And you think, well, that's not true. Everyone cares. No, they don't care. They've proven it. And it's heartbreaking. The ruble spiked, I think it was 20% in one day over there. That makes the price of a loaf of bread 20% higher in one day. And we don't know how much higher it's going to go. But you start doing that to people, you know, you're opening the door for probably the easiest thing to do is start cyber warfare.
Yeah,
well, that's already begun, right? That happened even before, but
right on a lower level. But they can raise it up a notch. And I think the nuclear option is like toward the end of the line there. But you know, they start doing that kind of stuff, things can get crazy really quick. All it takes is one person to do something really stupid, and that's how wars have begun.
Well, Paul, we want to thank you for coming on the program tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And we're hoping that in the coming weeks that you'll be able to come back and share with us some more thoughts. I just want to end tonight by praying for the Ukrainian people, for the especially the believers. There's a lot of Christians in Ukraine. We want to pray for them. We want to pray for Ukraine, the civilians, the people that are caught in the middle. And there's just a lot of things happening, a lot of moving pieces that we don't fully comprehend at this moment. But, you know, I think about the children. I think about people that are just kind of going about their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
This is just destroying them. And again, it's affecting people in Russia too. Someone was telling me that the average Russian lives on $6,000 US a year.
Yeah.
$6,000 US a year.
And that's what we forget about too. It's not just Ukrainians that are being hurt by this. There's also Russian innocents that want nothing to do with what's happening.
Absolutely.
And realistically, they get tarnished and they get hurt as well. It's sad.
Well, we know God is at work in the midst of this situation. And we pray as Jesus taught his disciples. He said, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." This is Pastor David Ripley, believe it or not, signing off. Have a blessed evening.